Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy John, engineering and producing our program. We are off and running here on Tuesday, March 21st, 2023. We are now officially into the season of spring, and we're all officially into the 13th year with our radio project. In the Green Thing Zocalo Village studio, the radio station 1030, KVOI, Tucson's trusted source for news and talk, worldwide live listening on my website, buckmastershow.com. Our live line for our telephone interviews, presented by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. Let's go right now on the live line to the University of Arizona president, Dr. Robert Robbins, joining us. Dr. Robbins, how are you, sir?
I am well, Bill. How are you?
Doing well. Thanks for asking. Have you recovered from, a pretty tough past couple of 4 days for the men and women's basketball teams?
Yeah, I was talking to someone last night and asked them how they were doing, and they said they're experiencing severe March sadness. So I think that's appropriately. I went out to College Park to watch the women who played a great second quarter and fourth quarter against Maryland, but came up a little bit short. They've got a tremendous team. But I'm so proud of both our men and women's teams. Obviously, everyone is disappointed with our early exit of both tournaments. But, you know, as they say, Bill, there's always next year.
Yeah, there certainly is. I do want to circle back, maybe a quick follow-up sports question before we talk about tuition. Is there anything new on the Pac-12 and the realignment? Things have been kind of quiet on that scene. Things sort of in a wait and see hold here, Dr. Robbins?
Yeah, you know what I've said all along about this is there's not a lot to talk about until we see an on paper contract with a media deal. So you know, we're all anxiously awaiting the possibility of getting a real deal for the chancellors and presidents of the Pac-12 to vote on. So we're eagerly awaiting that, and I think that's going to be coming sooner rather than later, meaning within the next several weeks.
Let's talk a little bit about tuition. You have put forward a proposal to the Arizona Board of Regents for raising undergraduate tuition by about 3% for in-state students and 4% for out-of-state students who enroll next year. What's the overall, the big picture of this, Dr. Robbins?
Yeah, so in the last couple of years, we've really not raised tuition, and for in-state students, it brings the rate for tuition up to just about $12,000. It's $11,871. So for out-of-state, it's $39,340, and that's as you point out, a 4% increase. We still think that for in-state students, it's a really good deal because on average, students pay about $5,700 in-state tuition. Given that we are able to give scholarships and credit to in-state students, so I think it's a pretty good value. Now, of course, there's always the expenses of a place to live and eat and transportation and all the other things. But for the tuition, I think it's a really good deal that people in the state are getting. And I know that you know, our Constitution says is near to free as possible, and so, you know, for many families, that's still a big lift. But I think compared to our peers around the country, it's a pretty good value.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about take the peers. Are we in the middle or a little bit below the value on the average?
Yeah, if I look around the country, and I don't have the data right at, you know, in my hands, but, you know, a lot of the places that we are compared to, the lowest that I know of at the level of being an AAU land-grant institution would be the state of Florida and their flagship University of Florida. And, you know, I think that they are probably a little bit less. I think they're in the, you know, $7,000 range for in-state students, and they take very few out-of-state students. And that's because the legislature in Florida deems higher education as a really important imperative, and they invest in it. We probably have... I think we're at about 48 or 49 in terms of investment from the state into higher education. Before, you know, the 2007-2008 time, you know, we were getting really good support from the state, and then there was a big cut. The good news is they allowed us to have no limit on the number of out-of-state and outside the country students that come to the University of Arizona. So that's how we can afford to keep the place running, frankly.
We haven't talked in a while about this online component of the University of Arizona. Give us a quick update.
Well, I think things are progressing, and we hope that University of Arizona Global Campus, which is currently a separate university, separate 501c3 with 20-odd thousand students, with a separate board, would be coming into the University of Arizona as part of the university. And we hope that that will happen July 1st. And then all of those students, you know, their board would go away. The Arizona Board of Regents would be the governing board for, you know, obviously this new entity that we're bringing into the University of Arizona. And we think it's going to be tremendous for those students to be Wildcats. And they sort of been Wildcats, but indirectly with our association with them. But even though they're online, I mean, I think there are a lot of UAGC students who are also experiencing March sadness because they kind of identify with being a Wildcat forever. So that'll be official coming hopefully July 1st.
Is that the model for the 21st century university, a large university, a land-grant university, this mix of online and on-campus and brick-and-mortar?
Yeah, I think it is for everybody. I mean, if you look at Penn State Global Campus, Purdue Global Campus, University of Maryland, where I just was, they have a huge online presence. And so, you know, we're in, certainly ASU, I mean, their online experience is enormous. So we've been a little bit behind, but I think this move to bring students officially into the University of Arizona is going to be something that will be beneficial to the university through our land grant mission and to those students, because I think they're going to get a good education, hopefully help them either get a promotion or advance in their current job, or to go out and get a job. So I think this is a tremendous added benefit and something that fits right into our land grant mission of serving these students that are traditionally older and usually out in the workforce. Many are in the military or have been in the military. So we think this is something that many other universities are doing, and you know, I'm just proud of what we're doing in this regard.
All right, I'm going to wrap it up with you, but final note about the Tucson Festival of Books. I remember when all of this began about a dozen years ago, and there was at the time people were saying, I don't know if this is going to be a success because everybody's reading books online. My goodness, this has become one of the premier book events in the United States, in North America.
That's right. It's tremendous, and we're just so happy to continue to host it on our campus. We do it through during the time of spring break. I have not, Bill, been able to get to the festival as much as I've wanted to because it kind of coincides with the Pac-12 tournament during our spring break. But the times that I've been here, and I know from the reports, just the number and the quality of the authors and people who come out and support the festival is tremendous. I think it's still the third largest book festival in the country, and that says something for Tucson. I don't know if you saw the Time Magazine article about Tucson being one of the 50 most desirable destinations in the world, not even in the United States, in the world.
Yeah, that was big.
There's a lot going on in Tucson, and we're at the University of Arizona just happy to be part of the community.
Yeah, that Time report was pretty interesting about, I think actually there were 32 destinations worldwide, and Tucson was one of them that they praised for 2023.
Right.
Dr. Robbins, always a pleasure. Thank you very much.
Okay, Bill, thank you.
All right. This portion of our program presented by Mona's Danish Bakery. They are open right now for lunch. They open at 6:30 in the morning, Tuesday through Saturday, for a great breakfast, great pastries. I am very much into croissants right now. The chocolate croissant, the butter croissant, had them both over the weekend, and I'm ready for more. Mona's Danish Bakery is the website. Shelley Fishman is with me in studio, and he just gave me a rather enthusiastic two thumbs up. So we'll find out what that's all about. But there's still time. It's a Tuesday afternoon. Maybe things will change in the next 5 minutes. We'll see. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006, and the RTA is working with the Citizens Advisory Committee to prepare and present a new draft plan as early as 2023 for public review. Learn more about the process at rtanext.com.
Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
This This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
Have you always wanted to cruise to Alaska? If that's the case, then you'll only see the tip of the iceberg. At Bon Voyage Travel, we can package the full Alaska experience with a cruise tour. Journey to Denali National Park on glass-domed rail cars. Tour the tundra wilderness and see the northern lights with an expert guide. And of course, relax on your cruise as you enjoy the glaciers up close and personal. Go to bvtravel.com today. Bon Voyage Travel, your Alaska experts.
Shelly Fishman is a financial consultant in private practice in Tucson, Arizona. The views expressed during this segment are his own and don't necessarily represent those of this station or of Bill Buckmaster Communications. Contact Shelly through buckmastershow.com or at shellyfishman.com.
And here he is, Shelly Fishman, in a good mood. Yesterday was robust on the Dow.
And so is today.
Up over, what, 100?
Actually, we're at 250 now.
Ooh, very nice. Yeah. But there is, I noted this before we went on the air, there's a lot of ground to cover this year.
There is. Whoa. Just to break even for the year, we need another 2,400 points.
Whoa.
Or so.
Oh, 2,400 down.
Yeah, but, you know, it's only March. And who knows what could happen? I mean, we could have another bank set of failures, or Mr. Powell can decide that interest rates have to go up to 35% or something silly like that.
I always get nervous when Powell speaks.
Yes, and that's tomorrow.
And he'll be speaking.
There's a lot of uncertainty around the market right now.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact that we've had a couple of really good days indicates that things are calming down a bit. And I give the Biden administration tremendous credit for jumping right in on the Silicon Valley Bank issue. And he found an interesting way to fix it. He basically said, we're going to let the FDIC essentially step in and take over the bank, but we're not going to bail out the investors. We're only going to bail out the depositors, and we'll bail them out essentially above the $250,000.
They're going to be covered. The investors.
They'll be covered. The investors,
that's
on the other hand, may not be.
If it was a true bailout, Shelly Fishman, everybody would be covered.
We'd
correct?
Do what we did in 2008, and
bail
actually
the whole group,
right?
Yeah.
And then the government would become the owner of the bank,
that's
and then
not
sell
the way
stock.
It works this time.
And that's not the way it's working yet so far. Now, as Silicon Valley Bank has not yet found a buyer, or at least not as of the time I left the house and was checking the news. But the other big bank to get into trouble, coincidentally at the same time, was Credit Suisse.
Yes.
And they did find a buyer.
Very big Swiss bank.
UBS.
That's had a very, very difficult kind of troubled past.
You know, and I hate to get too financial here, but if you take a look at UBS, which is buying Credit Suisse.
The other really big bank
of
Switzerland.
The other really big bank in Switzerland. They're buying it for less than 5 billion euros.
Mm.
Now think, Credit Suisse, I don't know, I'm just guessing, there must be 300, 400 billion euros in deposits in Credit Suisse Bank. And yet, a bank is able to come in there and buy all of those assets for less than 5 billion euros.
Bargain basement.
Bargain basement. So that tells me that if you look at the balance sheet for Credit Suisse, there's, you know, on the one side, there's all these deposits. On the other side, there's all this red ink. And you wonder how all of that red ink can get that red over a period of time and the bank not publicly be aware of the fact that it's in trouble.
Yeah.
So, and to a certain extent, we have the same problem with the Silicon Valley Bank, and I'm sure there are several other banks in that category right now where the increase in in interest rates caused by the Fed trying to deal with the inflation problem has taken the bank management by surprise, or they were just inept or slow to manage the problem. And so as a result, the assets of these banks are in trouble. In balance sheets, when banks have their balance sheets in trouble, you can only hide that for so long.
Wouldn't you think that management, when rates started to go up, it's not like they started going up yesterday. There's been this over a year. You would think that they would, the bank managers would say, we've got to do something here.
You would think. Now, in their defense, there hasn't been this kind of increase.
In 40 years. Yeah.
So in their defense, this is a group of management teams mm-hmm. that have never had to deal with this kind of problem before. Nevertheless, they went to school. they have a set of bona fides that would make them qualified mm-hmm. to be managers of banks. And you just wonder how vulnerable everything is right now. And that's the problem with the markets right now is that they're wondering, you know, is this the tip of the iceberg? Is this going to be something that we're going to have to deal with over the next several months in a more robust way? And what's it going to cost if we do that? Now, that's, quite frankly, the Fed's problem right now, in a way, that's kind of ironic. And in a way, if you want to use the term Schadenfreude, you know, it's nice to see Powell kind of squirming a bit, because he has taken a singularly monotheistic approach to this problem. We have an inflation problem, and I'm going to be the next Paul Volcker and fix it.
And some are ready for him to go.
Well, you know, people like Elizabeth Warren have called for his resignation. Please, Mr. Powell, do not resign tomorrow. The markets do not need that kind of turmoil. However, you know, if you didn't quite fill out your full term, that mm-hmm. wouldn't be so bad mm-hmm. either. Mm-hmm. We're going to hear from the Fed tomorrow.
Maybe he could say, I'm exploring some other opportunities.
Oh, I've got to, you know, I'm going to go run a university.
Yes, I've got some time here, but I'm not leaving tomorrow, but I am thinking about it.
Well, he's not going to say that.
Okay.
But he is going to say, here's what I'm going to do between now and the next Fed meeting in May. We're either going to leave rates where they are, or
which
we're going to increase them. Or we're going to increase them a little bit, or we're going to go our full half point, which is what we were planning to do anyway. Mm-mm. His problem is if he says, you know, we're going to just hold this back off for now. That's kind of like a tacit admission.
Yes,
that he's been screwing this up for the past couple mm-hmm. of months, because the unintended consequences of all these interest rate increases is to put the bank's balance sheets in jeopardy. Okay, I mean, there's also a whole bunch of international unintended consequences. But that said, if he does just a quarter of a point, okay, fine, he saves some face. If he goes and does a half a point, then he's basically saying, I don't care about the banks.
Oh,
somebody else's problems.
I hope a half point.
Okay, so the markets yesterday and today, I think, are anticipating that
a quarter
the pressure will actually get him not to raise interest rates at all this go around.
Whoa.
I hope they're right. I hope the market is right in this case. If it's only a quarter of a
Powell,
point.
Powell, there might be some kind of a speech, too, after whatever he does.
Exactly. And you know, that'll take us. You know, I think about this problem in a way that maybe testifies to my age.
Mm.
In 1933, and I wasn't there
of
in
1933. Of course you weren't. No.
The Roosevelt administration passed something called the Glass-Steagall Act. What it did was, and remember, we're in the midst of the Great Depression then, and this was one of the first, call it New Deal, pieces of legislation to fix the financial system in the country, is it separated the investment banking sector from the commercial banking sector. And it did it because it recognized that the management skills required to do commercial banks were very, very different from the management skills required to run an investment bank.
Mm-hmm.
And from 1933 mm-hmm. until 1999, mm-hmm. the Glass-Steagall Act kept those parts of the banks
mm-hmm.
separate.
Mm-hmm.
In 1999, they repealed Glass-Steagall.
Mm.
And it didn't take a decade for the banks to get into incredible trouble.
Interesting point. I never heard that, but I do have heard that before all of this happened in 1933, it was very common to have run-on banks
absolutely time
in the early 30s.
Oh, yeah. I mean, so as unpopular as it might seem, I think we need more regulation and we need more regulation. I mean, the banking sector.
I'll
take the letters.
All right.
Even if you keep commercial and investment together, the amount of regulation you need to protect the society from greed and mismanagement, just, you know, every decade or so, it keeps popping its ugly head up. We need to control it.
All right, Shelley Fishman, always a pleasure. We'll see what happens tomorrow.
Mr. Buckmaster, have a great week.
Thank you very much.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com. The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. And your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show and the Green Thing Zocalo Village Studio. I'm excited about spring because I know it's a great time to do some gardening. Green Things is the place to go, 3384 East River Road by the Rito River, just west of the Brandy Fenton Park. And it is everything it says in the name. It's a green place with green things. And Zocalo Village. I love Zocalo Village for all that beautiful garden accessories, Talavera pottery, all sorts of wonderful handcrafted dining room sets made out of some beautiful woods like our own mesquite wood. Check out greenthingsazzocalovillage.com as well. Open daily, 53rd year of business. Well, once a month, usually every 4 to 6 weeks, one of our favorite guests is Dr. Jeff Silvertooth, the A professor and extension specialist in agronomy and soil science in the Department of Environmental Science at the University of Arizona. He served on the University of Arizona faculty and worked statewide since 1987. So as they say, Jeff didn't just get off the bus yesterday. Dr. Silvertooth has been recognized as a fellow for the both of the American Society of Agronomy and Arizona Soil Science Soil Science Society of America. Jeff, how are you?
I'm fine. Thank you, Bill. How are you?
Good. Thanks for asking. We've got a ton of things in my stack of stuff. This is pretty recent about the Navajo Nation. We don't hear a lot about the Navajo Nation, and for that matter, the Indian First Nation tribes and their water rights.
Right. Right. There was oral arguments represented yesterday to the Supreme Court regarding the case that is now called Arizona versus Navajo Nation. And being not being an attorney, but following this, trying to follow it the past, you know, several months, several years, really. The case began with Navajo Nation basically charging the university or charging the state of Arizona that they needed water. They'd never been given the water rights associated with the Colorado River Compact, the 1963 decision of the Supreme Court in the Arizona versus California case, which all of those were landmark cases in the body of what we call the law of the river. And the Navajos are claiming they have some rights to water on the Colorado River, and they need to be included in those divisions. So that case went to court. My understanding is they were denied. They appealed. They went to the Ninth Court of District Appeals, and they were awarded a decision in their favor at the Ninth Court of District Appeals, and then they were encountered in appeal. That was appealed by Arizona. So that's why it's back to the Supreme Court. It's on up to the Supreme Court. They accepted the case, and it's the Arizona versus Navajo Nation now. So the Arizona didn't start the deal. They're a plaintiff at this level. And basically the two arguments come down, as I understand them, that the Navajos are saying that there were agreements, trust in the agreements that were made back in the 19th century, two major treaties, that they were not included in on the Colorado River, and that began with the compact.
And, well, I'm surprised.
Yeah.
And the reason I love the job is I learn things every day. I thought the Navajo Nation was included in the 1963 compact.
They may have been to some extent.
But they're saying they're not getting anywhere near what they believe is their fair share.
Right. No, it comes down like this. It's the 1963 decision. That's where the portions were drawn out that we see today. You know, the 4.4 million acre feet to California, 2.8 to Arizona, et cetera. And the Navajo Nation was not explicitly given water out of the Colorado River. Now, what the government had said, they never had said, is my understanding, that they would, this is the argument, that it was not explicitly stated they would give them Colorado River water. They would say they would provide them to them water. But they didn't specifically
Where's
say.
Where's that going to come from?
Well, it could come from other sources that they have up there. There's the San Juan, Little Colorado. And then, of course, there's the water that the Navajo Nation has on their reservation. Plus, it's a dry place like the rest of Arizona.
Right.
So this is really, this could, the bottom line is, it depends where the Supreme Court goes. And the oral arguments were yesterday. And I understand they'll come out with a decision probably in June. And when they do, if they decide in favor of the Navajo Nation, well, that's going to change the calculus on the entire thing that's going on right now with these negotiations on the river, as well as what will happen again in 2026 when the next round of major discussions come out. And it would also put them in the government in line with in conflict with probably several other tribal nations who they probably as part of the argument that was presented, I think, is to say that if they Supreme Court decides in favor of the Navajo Nation in this case, it would really open up a can of worms with regard to more lawsuits from other nations, other tribal nations against the federal government.
It's interesting that they're talking about two treaties between the Navajo Nation and the federal government. One of them was signed in 1849 and the other in 1868.
Right, yes. Right. Exactly. Exactly. And that, you know.
And based on what Navajo history, they weren't really treated very well.
Right.
And those two treaties.
No, the 19th century wasn't a time of of graciousness and gratitude towards the Native Americans. Let's face it, it was a time of conquest.
Yeah, but it is going to it could change potentially this
very much
this
so.
Whole picture. And now there another development has since we've seen you last. This is really a big story and. Tony Davis, he's doing just such a fabulous job. I want to do a shout-out to Tony at the Arizona Daily Star. We hope he never retires because this guy is just all over this story about the United States. $250 million for Lake Mead could delay the CAP cuts to Tucson.
Right, right. That is a new development, and that was a good article that Mr. Davis had in the paper, Arizona Daily Star, just a few days ago. Mm-hmm. And that is big news for us. But you know, the government hasn't specified if they put that money out how that would be spent. There's speculation that how that money would be spent would be to basically retire put some lands in fallow, some agricultural lands go to fallow, take the water savings from there to add to what we need in the reductions on the river, and that would possibly relieve some stress on CAP, which would affect Tucson in this case. Tucson gets most, if not all, its drinking water right now from the CAP. You know, there's other angles to this, too. Now, Mr. Davis, I don't think, mentioned this, but the federal government is looking very strongly at what they call HHS, Health and Human Service allocations for water. California has 55 gallons per day, I think it is, per person, per capita.
55 gallons per day.
I think it's 55, and by the time you add up the people, it adds up to quite a bit.
Yeah.
And the government is saying, well, we need to make sure we have the water associated with to support the populations in these states. To support HHS, that Health and Human Services. Now, I don't know, like we said earlier, the federal government will come out, the Bureau of Reclamation and the Department of Interior, with a response to those proposals that went in the end of about a month ago, we talked about last time. Those proposals from the various basin states, basically six basin states versus California, two proposals they're reviewing. And when they come out with that decision, or some indication on that next month in April, as I understand, that'll give us some ideas of how they would treat that HHS, and then possibly how this money, this $250 billion, where that would possibly go in terms of putting some relief on the river. That's what the speculation is, as I understand.
Circling back to our beginning topic about Native Nations, First Nations, and their water rights in Arizona, okay, the Navajo Nation was not included when it came to the CAP allotments for the CAP. Is that correct, Jeff?
Right, yes.
Okay. But several nations were Indian nations.
Yes.
They do have rights.
Yes. Okay. Principally, the two big tribal nations that receive water through CAP is the Gila River Indian Community, correct? Mm-hmm. The Gila River Indian Community in central Arizona, and also to the Akchen Indian Community, also in central Arizona. They're pretty much closely adjacent to each other. They're in Pinal and Maricopa counties. But those two are included in the CAP.
Have they exchanged water rights in the past to farmers?
Yes, to some extent, and they have now. There was a recent decision made. I think it was either a law passed or as a decision made, or I don't know how that legally how it worked out. Mm-hmm. But they were given the capacity. They and the CRIT, Colorado River Indian Tribes, over on the river in Parker Valley. They and Gila River Indian Community were given the opportunities to basically sell that water and basically commoditize the water to a large extent. I don't know. There's some conflict with the tribes on that, so that gets to be a detailed deal. But that decision did come through in favor of what the Colorado River Indian tribes were offering to do, and that would be in relation to that. The Native Americans are now, particularly in central Arizona, these tribes we mentioned, these three particularly, are in a very good condition to bargain with the rest of the state with regard to the water they have access to. And they have high-priority water, these tribes do.
And promoting our Friday Focus interview this week will be with John Kamak. John is the Tucson Water Director, so it'll be interesting, Jeff, to hear what he says about the impact of mandatory cuts in CAP deliveries to Tucson. So we'll talk with Mr. Kamak about that on Friday.
Right. And so those would be what we would anticipate to come. Right now, there have not been any cuts to any of the metropolitan centers in Arizona or California. But what we're discussing in relation to that would be what's anticipated to possibly develop with regard to the federal government's decision, the Bureau of Reclamation's decisions on this. But we all know, too, Bill, 80% of the water on the Colorado River goes to agriculture. That's part of why we're talking about it here
mm-hmm.
today.
Yes.
And we know, too, the arithmetic is you got to cut two to 4 million acre feet off a 16.5 million acre foot budget, and you have 40 million people, 30 Native American tribes that are living on this water, 6 million acres of cropland. The agriculture is going to, there's no way we get around this. Agriculture is going to, is facing some major cuts before the cities are. They're all trends are, all indications are the feds will probably do all they can to protect the urban centers, I guess would be.
All right, Jeff, we're going to pause right here. A lot more with you, including all of the rain in California. Is that going to impact agricultural prices here in Arizona for the consumer? We'll ask Jeff Silvertooth about that after this.
Tucson's original gastropub, Noble Hops in Oro Valley, proudly announces a second Tucson area location where you'll enjoy locally brewed craft beer and gastropub fine fare. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and now at the DoubleTree Hotel on Alvernon across from Tucson's Reed Park. More on the web at noblehops.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority Plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax. The RTA tax is collected throughout Pima County and averages about $100 million in revenue each month. The RTA is the largest annual funder of regional transportation projects in the region. The RTA tax funds priority projects that were approved by voters in 2006. See details in the latest RTA annual report at rtamobility.com.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We are also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Family-owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rieto River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show and the Green Thing, Zocalo Village Studios. This portion of our program presented by our friends in Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. It looks really nice over in the Gila National Wilderness after a very robust, some winter rains, and things are looking good, greened up, good time of year to take a road trip. It's only about a 3-hour drive. Jump in the truck, hop in the car, or even the motorcycle, and head east for Silver City. Start your planning by visiting southwestnewmexico.org. Where to stay, some great places to stay, all sorts of things to do, and some great places to eat as well over in southwestern New Mexico. University of Arizona agronomist Dr. Jeff Silvertooth with us for his monthly visit. When you were with us about a month ago, you were almost, after the interview, you were in fact right out the door to Yuma, a really big water conference. Bottom line, how did it go?
It went real well. It was the Southwest Ag Summit. So there's a broad spectrum of agriculture-related topics we cover there. We're covered there, and I directed a breakout session that was dealing with the Colorado River water shortage, and we had agriculture perspectives presented, and I had three other members of the community were participating with me, and it went real well, Bill. Thank you. Yeah, it was a good program.
What was the bottom line? What was the takeaway message, Jeff?
This program we had, of course, right there, it was in Yuma. It was just right on the heels. It was the 23rd of February. So it was right on the heels of the presentation of the two proposals that had gone into the Bureau of Reclamation from the seven basin states. Six basin states, including Arizona, had written one proposal that went in, and California broke away, did not join the consensus of that first proposal, wrote their own. So what we did at that conference, basically we had Mr. Bart Fisher from Palo Verde Valley. He's on the board for the Colorado River Water Board for the state of California, representing the state of California. He's on that board, that commission. He represents them at the tables of negotiation.
He is so influential in this whole decision that's been...
Yeah, he's a sharp guy. He's been involved with water governance on the river for several decades. Mm-hmm. And he has a wealth of knowledge, wealth of history, and he's just a very reasonable thinker and a good man. Mr. Larry Cox was also with us. He's a farmer and also members of the boards down in the Prudhoe Valley. And then Mr. Elston Grubaugh, who's the director for the Welta Mohawk District, he represented the Yuma area. So we had contrasting points of view that were presented. But they each did a very good job of articulating their perspectives and their points of view and kind of how the California case was developed. And then, of course, we contrasted that with some perspectives over on the other side of the river.
Very contentious, though, bottom line.
The topics are, but I have to really applaud everyone
was
involved.
Civil, right?
Everyone was cool. Everyone was civil. It was we had a good time with
That's
it,
That's a
actually.
Step in the right direction. Okay, what about all of the rain, in some cases record rains in California, the Salinas Valley, known for strawberry production,
that as well.
Some other things.
Particularly, we think of it as it's the summertime version of Yuma.
Okay,
and so it's all that leafy green vegetable industry goes back and forth from Yuma to Salinas every year. So they're in that transition right now,
and parts are underwater.
Yeah, so there should be planting and getting the lettuce crop started right now as we tail out of Yuma, finished up out there, and this is the very end of the season going out of Yuma right now. It's pretty much finished up, so it's moving to industry moves to California, to the San Joaquin, a pocket called the Huron Valley, and it also is being inundated with these rains as well. Then they move over to the Salinas for the summer season and then back to Yuma in the fall. Well, right now, that's going to obviously delay their plantings and mess up their early structure of that crop over there for this summer season.
Cost impact?
It'll cost the farmers for sure and it'll cost the shippers because they're not going to be able to fill contracts very likely if these delayed plantings with their contracts, like these, grocery stores and produce shippers around the country, produce delivery systems.
What do you make of this? Your colleagues at the University of Arizona, they're in a group called the Southwest Center, and they put out a pretty much highly publicized report urging a variety of new farming practices for the state of Arizona if farming is to survive in this state.
Well, I am familiar with that.
Yes, I
do read those ideas with great interest, and I've listened to my colleagues from the university. I don't agree with it, but be flat out honest and direct about that. Mm-hmm. I respect their positions and their ideas. I take it that they are sincere in their efforts to put forth some good comments, some good ideas, but I don't see them as being feasible, not in the context of what we have today. We have, this is a reality, you know, they're advocating things like we need to grow crops like prickly pear and agave and go to dry land farming and go to more of the conditions and the production systems that were inherent with the Native Americans and a more antiquated form of crop production systems, which would work fine if we were living in the 16th century, 17th century. But today we have 7 million people in this state, 90% urban. Most of the western United States is over 90% urban. Most of the country is about 80% urban. And we don't have people out on the farms working, Bill. We have specialized society. And there's a small section of our society that's in production agriculture. They do a tremendous job, in my view. Of course, I'm biased in that. And I just don't see that the suggestions that are coming forth today are going to contribute in a productive, constructive way in the immediate future. And you know, one of the big things they don't have, besides all the agronomic aspects that we could talk about for several days, they don't have a market that's defined for these crops. Mm-hmm. And one of their colleagues pointed out, well, we need to develop that market. Well, by the time they develop that market and get all us to eating prickly pear and agave and little bits of corn, it's going to be a tough road to hoe. That's not going to happen very quickly, you know? So I just don't see them as being feasible. Well-intended, but not feasible.
They did say that, and perhaps you would agree with this, that the agricultural water crisis right now is the worst in the Colorado River watershed since Arizona statehood.
I would agree with that.
Yeah.
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 We can find grounds for agreement, you mm-hmm. know, I think. I mean, that's one mm-hmm. for sure. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
But working on trying to develop, as they say, develop these markets, that is something you can't just wave your hand and it's going to be there.
No, and it's not there right now. It's not. We don't have people. If we had people begging for those kinds of crops, I can tell you the farmers in this state and region would be producing them right now.
Mm-hmm.
Farmers aren't producing crops for sport. They're doing this because they're in a business. They're making. There's a market for these crops. There's a demand. And we have the capacity in Arizona and out here in the desert southwest to grow just about anything you like. Not completely, but to a huge variety of crop selections, and it's driven by markets. It's driven by where people can. If you and I were farming, we'd have to get a return on our investment,
mm-hmm.
and we'd have to be able to have that flexibility to move to those crops. So farmers would do it if it was really a viable option for them.
And a lot of farmers are saying that's enough. They're already going to just sell out to land developers. Certainly in Maricopa County.
Maricopa, Pinal County, it's happening
yeah.
right now.
Yeah.
Yes, sir. Because they've
yeah.
already lost some water in Pinal County. They lost quite a bit. The mm-hmm. water we've lost in Arizona, it's pretty much all come out of CAP deliveries to those irrigation districts, ag irrigation districts
mm-hmm.
in Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
So when we talk about Arizona losing 20% of its allocation from the Colorado River today already,
mm-hmm.
that's all gone out of ag communities.
It's really speeding, isn't it, Jeff, the whole corridor between on the I-10 corridor with homes.
It is, and it's rapidly growing. You know, I've been in this state for 36 years. And that's always been the prediction, is that mm-hmm. we'll grow this corridor together.
You can sure see one megamopolis.
Yep. Yeah, you can sure feel it. Get on I-10 and drive mm-hmm. back between Phoenix and Tucson. It's a mess.
It is.
But it's dangerous, but it's because we've just got a lot of people living right here.
All right, Jeff Silvertooth, always a pleasure. We'll look forward to your next visit.
Thank you, Bill.
Jeff.
Likewise. Thank you, sir.
All right, on behalf of Dr. Silvertooth and John, doing such a great job making sure all of our audio levels are the way they should be on the other side of the glass, Bill Buckmaster saying, hope everybody has a great day.